Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is the Song Travels Podcast. Each week on Song Travels, my guest and I share an hour of conversation and music. The Song Travels Podcast features some of my favorite moments from the interview. To listen to full episodes online, visit npr.org, and for more podcasts, subscribe at itunes.com/songtravels. Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is an award-winning actor, singer, comedian, and musician, David Hyde Pierce. He's widely known for his role as Niles Crane on the long-running TV series Frasier, for which he won multiple awards, including the Emmy for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy. But he's also a Tony Award winner for his role as Lieutenant Chaffee in the 2007 Candor Neb Broadway musical Curtains. He's appeared in dozens of films, including Sleepless in Seattle and Nixon, and he's done voice work in animated features, including A Bug's Life. He most recently directed a new musical, which I saw and loved, called It Should Have Been You. So I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. David Hyde Pierce, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
It's fun. It's fun to talk about music with you and songs.
Yeah. Well, we've done this informally, not on the radio, for a lot of years now, as neighbors and friends and colleagues. So it's nice to make it public.
Yes, it is. And the thing that I love about doing this show is helping to acquaint audiences with aspects of guests that they may not know about. And music is a very important part of your life.
Yeah, I started out, I thought I was going to be a musician. When I was a kid, I played the piano and the organ. I thought I was going to be a concert pianist, but it turned out I wasn't any good. So that fell apart. But music was always a part of my family life and my life growing up.
So was your first interest classical music?
Yes, you know, and it happened by accident. I was my elementary school, second grade teacher, music teacher, asked us to bring in a piece of music, a recording that we liked. And I didn't really listen to anything. I was a kid, and I found this recording of the Beethoven Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony. Never heard it before.
Had you not seen Fantasia?
I had not seen Fantasia at that point, so I didn't know that that existed. And I brought the album in. It was a record back then. That's how old I am. And she said, oh, this is great. Now, we don't have time to play the whole thing. What's your favorite part? And I was like, the second part. I didn't know. I'd never heard the thing. But then she put it on, and it was the first time I'd ever really listened to classical music, and I was completely mesmerized. And I thought, oh, this is good. I should listen to more of this.
At what age did you start playing the piano and the organ?
Piano I started at 8, and only because my mom and dad really believed that that was part of any kid's education. And my brother and sisters and I all went to the same piano teacher, Mrs. Stonequist. She was this wonderful old French woman who was a great teacher, loved music, and also loved the New York Mets. And so whenever you would go and have a lesson, if the Mets were playing, she'd be sitting there with her Mets hat on, and she'd kind of half be listening to you, but really she'd be watching the game that was on the TV in the other room. So that was ideal for those of us who didn't practice a lot, because you could get away with more.
The original multitasker.
Yeah.
When did you discover popular music, or what sort of music did you hear in the house, I should say?
Well, of course, my mom and dad, you know, they were of the World War II generation. So I think I was aware of kind of the classic American popular songs through them, although I can't say we listened to it a lot. But I certainly knew of, I'll Be Seeing You, and those, that sort of vintage song that they'd sometimes sing snippets of. And I got interested in that. The first popular song that I sort of knew, I was up at Williamstown, the summer theater there, and they have a cabaret. And they did an evening of Irving Berlin, and they asked me to be a part of it. And I'd never really sung that way in public. And I said, well, okay, let me try. And they gave me the song, A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody, which was ironic for me because having grown up as a musician, making that sort of metaphor or simile, I guess it is, was ironically appropriate for me.
Would you sing it?
Okay.
All right. A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody by Irving Berlin with yours truly at the piano.
Yeah. I have an ear for music, and I have an eye for a maid.
I link a pretty girlie with each pretty tune that's played. They go together like sunny weather goes with the month of May. I've studied girls and music, so I'm qualified to say a pretty girl is like a melody that haunts you night and day, just like the stray.
Well, I love doing that with you, David. Thank
well,
you.
Well, likewise. Nice, always nice working with you.
Interesting story about that song. It's from the Ziegfeld Follies of 1919, and it was introduced by a famous tenor of the day, John Steele. And, of course, those were the shows where there were those huge staircases immortalized in that in the movie An American in Paris, where he would sing and the girls, the beautiful girls, would come down the staircase. But the first line is, I have an ear for music. And John Steele on the opening night could not find his note. And so he sang, I have an ear for music. And he couldn't find the note. And it became the joke of Broadway that I have an ear for music when he was completely off. So
that's hysterical.
So I think of that every time I hear that. But I didn't want to tell you before you sing.
No, thank you. Now I'll reproduce that every time I perform it, if I perform it again.
Do you teach? Do you teach acting, or have you ever worked musically with students?
No, I've done a couple, what would you call them, seminars, or, you know, where I was invited to speak to acting students, things like that. Now they've asked me to stop. I have a sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. My orchestra conductor from my high school days has started this incredible organization, Midwest Young Artists. And it's an orchestra of these young musicians. And I was going to do a benefit, just appear at a benefit. But he said, listen, the day of the benefit, the orchestra is having a rehearsal. Is there anything you'd like to maybe play with them? Now, like I said, I started out studying music, but I also learned that I'm not meant to be performing in public in any significant way. I'm just not that good. But this was an opportunity to do just with a bunch of kids to just play something. And it's, like I said, it's a good orchestra. And in his description of this organization and trying to encourage kids to make music, he said, one of the things I say to them is I encourage them to make a mistake, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, with trying something that maybe is beyond your boundaries. And I thought,
yes.
Well, I am the poster child for making mistakes playing the piano. So I am exactly the man. So I said, all right, look, here's the deal. I have about a month before this event. I'm going to work on the Beethoven First Piano Concerto, piece I love. It's a piece that's, relatively speaking, not so hard. I had forgotten this, but as I started working on this piece, there are the most amazing jazz riffs in the Beethoven First Piano Concerto. There's like
really?
A whole section of ragtime in the third movement. There's an amazing, there's a sort of optional blues line in the first movement. I can show you maybe if you want.
Yes, please.
So that's the way people hear it all the time. But in the original manuscript of this piece, that high note didn't exist on Beethoven's piano. He didn't have an F sharp. It only went up to an F natural. So in the original manuscript, as it's written, it sounds like this. Which is essentially a blue note. If you add a grace note, it makes it even clearer. So there you have Beethoven bending notes in 17-something. And in this same piece, same first piano concerto in C major, he also introduces ragtime for, as far as I know, the first time it's heard in the history of man. It's in the middle of the last movement, and it goes like this.
That's fascinating because I've listened to the Beethoven concerto since I was a kid, this Toscanini Anya Dorfman recording, and never made any association with jazz. But of course, it is a lineage, and the origins of any kind of music come from something that was created before it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are so many, obviously, different lines that run into the world of jazz. It may, in this case, be more coincidence, but it is stunning because it happens in a lot of Beethoven's music where you have this sort of dotted rhythms that we associate with jazz and blues, and it's very cool.
Did you ever think that you would be starring in a musical comedy?
Well,
and winning a Tony?
No, not exactly. Although I can say this, that it wasn't, not the Tony, but the being in a musical comedy wasn't accidental. About 8 years before Frasier ended, I started working with a singing coach in L.A. and a dance coach because I thought I had been in the theater before I went into television. I knew I didn't want to keep doing television. I wanted to do something different. I realized with all this musical background I have, I've never done a musical.
Mm.
So I was preparing for it, and sure enough, when Frasier ended, I was able to go to New York, and part of the celebrity of television allowed me to access to be a star in a musical, even though I may not have earned it. But the great thing about Curtains, the ballad that I had, which was called Lunch Counter Mornings, Coffee Shop Nights, was the first song that John Kander had written for a show in which he wrote both the music and the lyrics, because during the course of their working on this show, Curtains, over many years, before we eventually got the production up, Fred Ebb, his longtime lyricist and collaborator, passed away. So the song was, it was a real honor to be able to sing that song. And what I love about that particular song is it's musically very beautiful. It's really, really sophisticated songwriting.
Well, let's listen to it from your original cast performance.
All right.
When I've finished my work and I crawl into bed, I reflect as I turn out the lights that the day that's to come and the week that's ahead will be lunch counter mornings and coffee shop nights. Lunch counter mornings and coffee shop nights.
Well, it's reassuring to have such a dependable schedule, like matinees every Wednesday.
Or brisket and broad beans each Thursday.
With your friends.
With, yeah. Well, I like my pals. The guys on the force. We're not very social. They're all married, of course. Sometimes we go bowling or have a few beers. So it's a fine life. A perfectly fine life. I'd give it two cheers.
You've been listening to the Song Travels podcast. To stream the full hour of this program, visit npr.org, and thank you for listening. I'm Michael Feinstein, host of Song Travels. To support this series, join the Friends of Song Travels. You can find more information on our Facebook page at facebook.com/songtravels.